Joe and the other now, Holly. And through God's grace and because this program works in my life, Adam and Esther asked me to take a drink since March the 10th of 1962. For this, I'm extremely grateful. It is truly wonderful to be here this morning. We said that we're here, we're going to talk mainly this morning about the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think if you're a new person, then this is what we need to talk about, the very first. The foundation of anything that's going to happen to you. As I say just for a minute, I am an alcoholic, and I experienced alcoholism in my life. And I was like a lot of alcoholics. I was like every alcoholic is sick. I had a problem in my life, and I didn't know what to do about it. In fact, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know I had it, and I didn't know what to do about it. Now, when an alcoholic, when you got a problem and you don't know you got it, and you don't know what to do about it, you're in one hell of a shape. And that's what the first step is saying. The powers of alcohol in our lives have become unmanageable. Now, alcoholism is just like any other health problem. It's a major health problem. And in treating health problems, just like any other, the treatment is the same. There are three ways to treat an illness, a disease, or a problem in your life. There's one basic method of problem solving, and the first thing we have to do when we have a problem is to find out what is the problem. This is basically what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous does. It uses the same procedure. Step one defines what is the problem. And after we find the problem, step two will define the solution. And then after you find the problem, and you have to have two specific points, then you can carry out a plan of recovery, which are the 10 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I think it's very simple. Step one shows the alcoholic where he is, exactly where he is. And step two says, once we find out where you are, we believe you ought to be over here. You know what I mean? That's all it does. But you know, you can't find out where you believe you ought to be until you find out where you are. See, so that's why the first step is important. Now, after you find out where you are and you find out where you want to go, then you can lay a 10-step, you have a step-by-step program that goes from point one to point two. It's just that simple. Now, alcoholism is a very unique illness. It's the only illness in the world where the victim has to make a self-diagnosis. Usually, in the case of an illness, the professional will diagnose you. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is why people don't recover from alcoholism, because they can't make this diagnosis. In order to make a diagnosis, you've got to have some information. And that's all the first step is, information. First two steps are just information. And I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. As an alcoholic who came to me 22 years ago in an old nut house and took their time to show me where I was. The majority of alcoholics in the world today, with all the treatment, with all the AA that's going on here, and in the States too, all the information on TV, radio, the majority of alcoholics who have alcoholism today are going to die from it. Most of them will never realize they're alcoholics. And if you've got heart disease and you don't know you got it, you might die from it. If you've got alcoholism and you don't know you got it, you may die from it. You see, alcoholism is also a kind of strange illness, because it's the only illness that tells the victim you ain't got it. No, it tells you. No other disease does that, you know what I mean? And you ask the guy, you know, you think you're alcoholic? Oh, I ain't no alcoholic. Well, that's the only way you can tell who's got it. The one that ain't got it's got it. Now, these social drinkers, if you walk up to one of them and say, you know, you might be an alcoholic, he say, I might be, he ain't got it. So it's a very strange illness, and is the only illness in which we have to diagnose, self-diagnose, self-prescribe, and carry out the plan of treatment. Usually, the professional, if you went to a doctor, the professional would diagnose your heart disease, right? He would prescribe treatment for you. Now, you might have to go along and take the medicine and help him with the treatment plan, but he has to do the first. In alcoholism, we have to do all three. And this is why we have the steps to guide us through the diagnosis, the prescribing, and the treatment plan. So all of that is based on the first step, what is the problem? And we talked a little bit of life by last night. There's a world of ignorance about alcoholism, and this would like to kill me. This is why I didn't know anything about alcoholism, but I knew I wasn't an alcoholic. Ain't that a hell of a thing? I didn't know nothing about it, but I knew I wasn't. Because I didn't understand alcoholism. And I lived in a world, and see it, and this is what's so killing about alcoholism, because we live in a world of ignorance about alcoholism. It's very difficult to diagnose yourself and all the ignorance that's in society about alcoholism. You know, since the beginning of time, people didn't understand alcoholism. And it caused, for 2,000 years, we had a society that didn't understand alcoholism. And many people have searched it. Many things have, when we don't understand a problem, we just, you know, try all kind of things that solutions. And we've done that with alcoholism. Now, usually when you have an illness, you have symptoms that go with a problem. It's like you have a common cold. You know, the first thing, you might cough a little bit. And then after, you don't think nothing about it, you probably say, well, I got a little something in my throat. So you just keep on coughing. And as you cough for a while, your coughing will infect your nose, and your nose will start running. And then you still won't do anything, and you keep on going, and then your eyes start running. See, the throat infects the nose, and the nose infects the eye. Now you got three things going, but you keep on going. Then finally, you know, your throat will get sore, because the eyes and all that affects the throat. And then you start getting a little fever. About that time, you say, you know, I believe I'm catching a cold. Well, what you do, you read the symptoms and identify the problem, right? Now, you don't take the medicine for the cough. You take the medicine for the cold, and the eyes clear up, and the throat clears up, and the fever goes away, and the cough stops. So you read the symptoms and treat the problem. Well, alcoholism is the same way. It has a certain pattern of symptoms. You know, I remember the first thing, you know, I started having problems with my home problems. Well, I just kept on going, you know. Had problems on the job. If you got problems on the job, next thing you're going to have is money problems. So I had money problems. And if you got money problems, the next thing you're going to have is wife problems. So these one symptom caused the next one, but I kept on going. And I didn't read the symptoms and treat the problem. I didn't know what the problem was. The only thing I could do was treat the symptoms. And when I lost a job, I went and got another job. Of course, if you still got the problem got rid of the second job, right? So I went and got another job. Problem got rid of the third job. And all I was doing was treating symptoms. Ran out of money, went and made some more money. Alcohol got rid of that money, so I went and made some more money. For 15 years, I kept on treating symptoms, never doing nothing about the problem, because I didn't understand. And what was really foolish, alcohol got rid of one wife, and like a fool, I went and got another one. But I never did nothing about the original problem in my life. Because I didn't understand it, and I didn't know what it was. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous, regardless of all the treatment centers and all the psychiatrists and all the people in the world, I tell you one thing, Alcoholics Anonymous is the only place where a drunk can find out what his problem is. We know. And they told me, number one, when I come to AA, and say the first day we must understand that I have a disease. And I think really we don't get into these words. What is a disease? And I could use this word extensively in my life, but what does it really mean? And so a word is self-explanatory. It means dis-ease. Nine out of ten people that drink are at ease with alcohol. They can just take a drink, and I watch them on the airplanes when you got them in close. Boy, they... I don't know what the hell they're doing. But they get a drink and get a little ounce and put in it, and I don't know, they got them little sticks. I don't know what the hell they're doing, but they stir it about a half hour. I don't know. I ain't never have to stir them up. And when they get it all stirred up, you know what they do? They sit down and read the magazine. And they'll do like that, and they'll drink. And they have no problem with alcohol. They are at ease with alcohol. 9 out of 10 people who drink are at ease with alcohol. And 1 out of 10 people is very, very high figure. Well, that's a high. Actually, if alcohol was a brand new product, and we're not talking about against alcohol, but if alcohol was a brand new product, it couldn't be put on the market. Because at home, according to our Food and Drug Administration, any product that has an adverse effect on 0.1% of people cannot be sold to the general public. But alcohol has an adverse effect on 10% of the people who use it. 10% of the people who drink become alcoholic. And these people, those people are at ease, and the alcoholic is dis. Now, dis means away from, ease. Certain people are... A disease is a condition that separates people from the normal patterns of health. Alcoholism separates people. Alcoholism is a disease. And I was great to hear that, because all my life they told me I was sorry. And I'd rather be sick trying to get well than bad trying to get good. See, I have an illness, a major health problem. And Dr. Silkworth talks about this in the doctor's opinion in the front of the big book. And Dr. Silkworth is the father of the whole field of alcoholism, because this is a man that unlocked this great thing. No one understood it before Dr. Silkworth. Just like cancer today, people say we're hunting for a cure for cancer very hastily, but we're really not hunting for a cure for cancer. We're hunting for what is the problem. We're trying to find out what is cancer, what causes it. Then we could develop some system of blocking it. Prior to Dr. Silkworth, no one understood this illness. Dr. Silkworth, in his treatment, his work at the towns, he wasn't the first one, but the first person was a doctor named Sir Dr. Thomas Trotter, an English physician, in his thesis at Edinburgh. Wrote on the idea that alcoholism was a disease process. This was a very radical statement in 1778. He didn't unlock it, but he had the right idea. Alcoholism up this point had never been treated as a disease. The alcoholic was treated as a sin or a weakness. And then we treated it as a social problem. Now that was a hell of a thing, the way we treated alcoholism. Society didn't know what to do with alcoholism. They tried everything else. And then they decided to lock the alcoholics up. And that was a hell of a thing, and we still do it. The reason we decided to lock them up, we didn't know how to treat them, but we could get them out of the eyes of the well people. And finally, this doctor said he thought it to be a disease. Later on in American, a doctor who was the father of American psychiatry, Dr. Benjamin Rush, and he was a very prominent man, physician in his time, and involved in the everything of his time, because he was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. He wrote and did some work along these lines in 1845. And his papers were accredited in 1802. And based on some of his papers on the disease process, the first treatment center was set up of some kind in the States in Connecticut in 1845. Well, see, at the General Society, did not accept alcoholism as a disease. We still went on treating it the same old way. Dr. Silkworth coming to the towns. And Dr. Silkworth noticed that he's noticed in working with alcoholics every day, he said, on the firing line, he said he's credited with treating over 50,000 people. But during that time, he noticed that there was some driving force, there was some compelling force that drove the alcoholic. And he became aware of this. And he surmised, I came up with a theory. And that's what this book, this was a theory when it was published with 100 people sober in 1939. And he said this force was he divided it into two things. He divided it into a physical allergy and a mental obsession. This was a driving force that compels the alcoholic to self-destruction. Now, in order to talk about alcoholism, as we did last night, and those of you here last night, it is a unique health problem. Most health problems are physical. We have a lot of physical diseases, heart disease and cancer and some of the things we're talking about. We have another great number of illnesses that are mental, of the mind. In fact, all major health problems are usually physical or mental. And you know, we have our professionals now trained in these areas. We have professionals that are trained to deal with our medical, with our bodies. And they know little or nothing about the mind. They can only look at it from one way. And then we have the mental health professionals, the psychiatrists, and all these people that look at the minds. If we look at a total human being, we'll see that the human being is a tri-dimensional creature. There are three dimensions to human life. We have a physical life, which we are all aware of. We have a mental life. We also have a spiritual life. Now, since alcoholism affects the body and the mind, in recovery, we're going to have to talk about the third area of human life. Since two-thirds are sick, we're going to have to use the other third in order to recover from the other two-thirds. Now, alcoholism, you know, for years, we always talked about the medical doctors. They couldn't treat alcoholics. They killed a lot of drunks, beating them on the knees with little rubber hammers trying to find out what was wrong with them. And most of the psychiatrists treated like a Valium deficient. Dr. Silkworth came along, and he said, you know, in a discussion, though, he said, in this case, he said, this is a unique illness. And he was broad-minded, and he was a, you know, he was a rebel. And this guy said, any discussion, he said, of alcoholism which leaves out the physical factor is incomplete. Because in this case of this disease, I am sure the body is sickened as well as the mind. But we're going to look at two sides of this illness. And we're going to try to understand for the first time what is our problem. Number one, the physical side would cause a physical allergy. And when I come to AA, I could use these words, not in a general conversation, but we must in depth understand what is an allergy. I have a physical allergy to alcohol. Now we learned that the word allergy means an abnormal reaction to a food or chemical substance. Or would you like to say a reaction that is different from normal? See, the alcoholic has a reaction to alcohol that is different from the people who are at ease with it. Now, in order to understand what is normal, the first thing you got to understand, you can't understand abnormal until you first understand what is normal. And the alcoholic, I as an alcoholic did not understand that I was an abnormal drinker because all my drinking was abnormal. Now, I started off drinking in an abnormal way. Some people drink for a while and start drinking abnormally for 5 or 6 years. And if you've been drinking abnormally for 5 or 6 years, you think your drinking is normal. And on top of that, I drank with a whole lot of other abnormal drinkers. I did not want to drink with no social drinkers. Feel me? And I like what old Joe Martin says about it. You know, he said, now, if you got up in the morning and saw your wife getting a quart of milk out of the back of the commode, you'd say, hell, that's kind of abnormal. But I put a half pint of whiskey in there, and if somebody said something, I wouldn't know what they were even saying about. But that's kind of abnormal, putting a half pint of whiskey back there. So let's look at what happens to these two groups of people, the nine people who can drink, and what happens, and compare that to what happens to the alcoholic. Now, first we understand that alcohol is a depressive drug, and it is a drug. I didn't know that. But alcohol is a downer in the drug world, and it's a drug. It's the oldest drug that's used by mankind. It's an acceptable, legal, but it's a drug. Now, when alcohol is taken into the system, it depresses the brain in the reverse area it was created. It attacks the frontal lobe of your brain first, the outermost area. One drink. And then after you increase, two drinks, it affects the area of the brain that controls your coordination. Then you get to about five drinks and it affects the area of the brain that controls your vision. Now, it doesn't affect your eyes, but it affects the brain because the picture is focused onto the brain. And this is why they don't want you to drive an automobile. Because, you know, the first drink affects your judgment, your decision-making to do something. One drink affects that. Two or three drinks affects your ability to do something, the coordination. Five drinks affects your vision. You know, as you drink, just take your vision span and bring it in. You know, you can't see a car coming in from that side. It has to get right in front of you. Your peripheral vision is cut down because your picture is depressed like your TV goes in. So it's very dangerous to have the thing get in front of you before your slow coordination starts to do something about it. And that's why you see a drunk half the time. You never see we never see ourselves drunk. But you ever see a drunk, how he gets up and tries to get something in focus, you know? And he rubs his old, ain't nothing wrong with his eyes, it's his brain, you know? Okay. Now, if we can continue to consume alcohol, we would go to, say, 0.35, we would pass out. And if you continue on, if you didn't pass out, you continue to 0.50, 0.5%, you would die. So you really can't overdose off of alcohol because you pass out first. That's the reason we don't overdose. The system, and if you drink too fast, you'll vomit up, which is a protecting mechanism. So alcohol is a very dangerous drug to the system. And the system, even though we don't know it, our bodies have certain defenses against alcohol. And our bodies are very marvelous mechanisms. And as a lay person and not a professional person in the medical field, except in the field of alcoholism, I am amazed of our bodies. What a marvelous thing we are. And he was broad-minded, and he was a rebel. And this guy said, any discussion, he said, of alcoholism which leaves out the physical factor is incomplete. Because in this case of this disease, I am sure the body is sickened as well as the mind. But we're going to look at two sides of this illness. And we're going to try to understand for the first time what is our problem. Number one, the physical side would cause a physical allergy. And when I come to AA, I could use these words, not in a general conversation, but we must in depth understand what is an allergy. I have a physical allergy to alcohol. Now we learned that the word allergy means an abnormal reaction to a food or chemical substance. Or would you like to say a reaction that is different from normal? See, the alcoholic has a reaction to alcohol that is different from the people who are at ease with it. Now, in order to understand what is normal, the first thing you got to understand, you can't understand abnormal until you first understand what is normal. And the alcoholic, I as an alcoholic did not understand that I was an abnormal drinker, because all my drinking was abnormal. Now, I started off drinking in an abnormal way. Some people drink for a while and start drinking abnormally for 5 or 6 years. And if you've been drinking abnormally for 5 or 6 years, you think your drinking is normal. And on top of that, I drank with a whole lot of other abnormal drinkers. I did not want to drink with no social drinkers. Tell me. I like what old Joe Martin says about it. You know, he said, now, if you got up in the morning and saw your wife getting a quart of milk out of the back of the commode, you'd say, hell, that's kind of abnormal. But I put a half-fire whiskey in there, and if somebody said something, I wouldn't know what they were even saying about it. But that's kind of abnormal, putting a half-fire whiskey back there. So let's look at what happens to these two groups of people, the 9 people who can drink, and what happens, and compare that to what happens to the alcoholic. Now, first, we understand that alcohol is a depressive drug, and it is a drug. I didn't know that. And alcohol is a downer in the drug world, and it's a drug. It's the oldest drug that's used by mankind. It's an acceptable, legal, but it's a drug. Now, when alcohol is taken into the system, it depresses the brain in the reverse area it was created. It attacks the frontal lobe of your brain first, the outermost area. One drink. And then after you increase, say, 2 drinks, it affects the area of the brain that controls your coordination. Then you get to about 5 drinks, it affects the area of the brain that controls your vision. Now, it doesn't affect your eyes, but it affects the brain because the picture is focused onto the brain. And this is why they don't want you to drive an automobile. Because, you know, the first drink affects your judgment, your decision-making to do something. One drink affects that. 2 or 3 drinks affects your ability to do something, the coordination. 5 drinks affects your vision. You know, as you drink, just take your vision span and bring it in. You know, you can't see a car coming in from that side. It has to get right in front of you. Your peripheral vision is cut down because your picture is depressed, like your TV goes in. So it's very dangerous to have the thing get in front of you before your slow coordination starts to do something about it. And that's why you see a drunk half the time. Of course, we never see ourselves drunk, but you ever see a drunk, how he gets up and tries to get something in focus, you know? And he rubs his old, ain't nothing wrong with his eyes, it's his brain, you know? Okay. Now, if we can continue to consume alcohol, we can go to, say, 0.35, we would pass out. And if you continued on, if you didn't pass out, you continue to 0.50, 0.5%, you would die. So you really can't overdose off of alcohol because you pass out first. That's the reason we don't overdose. The system. And if you drink too fast, you vomit up, which is a protecting mechanism. So alcohol is a very dangerous drug to the system. And the system, even though we don't know it, our body has certain defenses against alcohol. And our bodies are very marvelous mechanisms. And as a lay person and not a professional person in the medical field, step in the field of alcoholism, I am amazed of our bodies. What a marvelous thing we are. We are God's greatest creation. There is nothing on this earth like our body. Each day our bodies are, we take food and we breathe in germs and different things that are coming to the system that are good and harmless to the system. Whether we breathe it in, drink, take it in, or whatever we put into our system. And when this comes into our systems, this marvelous mechanism analyzes what it is when it gets into the bloodstream. Immediately it analyzes everything. And it feeds this information to the brain. And the brain is feeding this information to thousands of organs. And each of these organs produces certain things to counteract what comes in. It's magnificent. This goes on all day long. And they say it would take quite a chemical plant with many, many chemists to produce the chemistry that my body is going to produce today. Now, my body knows that alcohol is a dangerous thing to the system. And when alcohol is put into the system of the non-alcoholic, when alcohol is introduced into the system, certain enzymes produced by the liver and the pancreas attack the alcohol immediately. Alcohol does not have to be broken down. It's a unique drug in that it can go directly into the bloodstream. You know, when you take a drink, it goes through the walls of your stomach or even through your tongue, directly into the bloodstream. You know, we take an aspirin. You hear about aspirins, which is the fastest. This one's faster than the other one. It takes 2 minutes. One takes 60 seconds. Well, booze is faster than aspirins. You feel it right away. And the alcohol goes directly to the brain. And as soon as alcohol hits the brain immediately signals the liver and the pancreas to produce certain defensive chemistry to eliminate the alcohol and protect the system. That's what it is. It's trying to protect itself. And as soon as these enzymes are released, it's broken down to acetaldehydes, diacetic acid, which is something to like a strong vinegar, and then down to the acetone level. From the acetones, it's broken down to the simple carbohydrate, which is then broken down into three harmless products: water, sugar, and carbon dioxide. The sugar is burned up as simple energy by the body, or stored as fat. The water is passed off, and the carbon dioxide is breathed off through the lungs. No problem whatsoever. Unless the police officer is out there with that breathalyzer, then you got a problem. Because if he gets hold of that carbon dioxide, you're going to be in trouble. But really, a normal way to metabolize alcohol. Most people take a drink, break it down, take a drink, metabolize it. We also know that the sensation of alcohol is different because we say that the average social drinker, when he takes a drink, he has certain built-in sensors. Because alcohol is, you know, the body has certain psychological or physiological signals for things that will hurt you. And when they take a drink, alcohol they get a sensation like they get a little dizziness and a little nauseous, and they get a sense of out of control. This is why them people on the airplane drink so slow. They don't want this nauseous feeling. The alcoholic doesn't feel that way when he drinks. When I take a drink, it didn't make me nauseous. It didn't make me dizzy. It didn't make me feel out of control. But it made me feel in control. I get a different sensation from alcohol than other people do. This is why they drink it like they do, and this is why I drink it like I do. Now, normal drinkers, well, you know, these people, when they take the alcohol in, break it on down, get it out of their system. We actually know from breathalyzer tests, that it takes the alcoholic longer to metabolize alcohol than it does social drinking. This is why in the States with our DWI programs, when we catch people with 0.35 and that high level of alcohol, we are sending them to DWI, we're sending these people to alcohol treatment. Why? Because normal drinkers don't run around with 0.35 in. They can't get in the car. Normal drinkers just don't run around with that much alcohol in them. They just don't drink that much. Now let's look at the person. These people are at ease. Look at this person as this. Let's look at this person who's different. Just look at me. When I took alcohol into my system, my body recognized the intake of alcohol, just like the normal social drinker. It signals, goes to the brain, and my brain signals my pancreas and my liver to produce the enzymes to break the alcohol down. But for some reason or another, my body does not produce enough of the defensive chemistries to alcohol. Just like some people don't produce enough insulin to break down sugar, my body don't produce enough of the enzymes to metabolize alcohol. So I attack the alcohol and I break it down to the acetaldehyde, down to the diacetic acid, down to about the acetone level. It seems that this is where it stops for a period of time. Now, I will break it down later on as I work on it. But once I get the acetones, and acetones are similar to the chemistries of kids are sniffing in airplane glue. It's the same thing. Same chemical. This chemical is the problem. It's really not the alcohol. It's the way my body handles alcohol. You might say it's the byproduct of the alcohol that causes me my problem, not the alcohol. My body turns alcohol into something else that causes me my problem. It's the acetones. When I get these acetones in my system, I have a physical craving for more of the same. So my body asks me for more alcohol to turn it into the acetone so it can be satisfied. Now, the craving of alcohol, Dr. Silkworth said, is caused by the allergy and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. Those 9 people over there never crave alcohol. And I used to think they use willpower. They don't use willpower because they don't crave it. And that's what's strange to me, as Charlie was talking about last night, that they get every time they drink, they get all they want. And that's amazing. I drank for 16 years. And I never can remember one time when I said, I got enough. I never get enough. Because the craving of alcohol can never be satisfied. You know, if you said you take one drink, and the one drink will make you crave one unit. Now, that one unit of craving is going to make you take the second drink. And once you take the second drink, you got 2 units of craving, though. The 2 units of craving, so the more you drink, the more you crave. You never satisfy that craving. You might get drunk, you might play, might close up, you might get too late, but you never get enough. The doctor said this craving of alcohol is caused by the allergy. And there's never been, there's no way we know to treat it. And it's sort of like a diabetic. You know, if you're a diabetic, they can give you some insulin, or they can cut down on your intake of sugar so it will match your insulin. If you don't produce enough insulin, they'll cut down and put you on a diet. And after a period of time, you still keep getting worse. You know, we talk about, medical science is smart. But do you know, and we always rely on medical people, and we do. But I think sometimes as we lay people here in 1984, with all our modern day technicians and all the modern things that we have, we kind of don't realize where we're at with the human body. If we took all the medical people in the world and all the medical knowledge that's available, and there's a lot, do you realize that we would only know 5% of the knowledge of the human body? Yeah, we know very little. And the doctors do not know about this complex chemical thing. They can only say that when you got allergic to something, you go to the doctor, he says, I believe you're allergic to dust. I believe you, and he says, I believe you better leave it alone. They cannot treat allergies. They can only find out what you're allergic to and suggest that you leave it alone. So when you break out with strawberries, you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, I believe you're allergic to strawberries. He don't say, here's some pills, go eat some strawberries. He says, only thing I can tell you is leave it alone. See, I learned 22 years ago that my body is allergic to alcohol. When I take alcohol into my system, I have a physical craving And the doctor says another key point. This physical craving is beyond the mental control. The physical craving is beyond the control of the mind. Now, that's what happened to me many days. I said, I'm going to go here and take two drinks, and then I'm going to stop it with my mind. And I never did stop it. Once I put them two drinks in my stomach, I said, and I'm going on to work. And I see myself now there, sitting there in the bar, watching the buses going by and telling myself, I'll get the next one. I see somebody else here did that. I intended to have two, but the physical craving was beyond controlling it with the mind. Now, that was the only problem. We could just leave alcohol alone, but we know that also half of my problem is in the body, or part of it. It doesn't say half. I like to look at it and know this. 70-30. 30% of my problems in my mind. In my body, rather. It's a physical illness, and I can't do anything about it. But my main problem is in the mind. I think 70% of it is in the mind. And this is where we're going to do most of the work, over on the other side. Now, I'm allergic to alcohol, and I can't even drink alcohol. If that was all it was, all I have to do was to be just to quit drinking. If it wasn't for the mental side, I could just like the doctor said, you're allergic to strawberries. I don't think you should eat strawberries alone. But I didn't have no mental thing about strawberries. Now, I just don't eat them, right? Okay. And alcohol, we have a problem in the mind with alcohol. And this is where we think that all the work is going to be done. And I realize today that my biggest problem wasn't the fact that I couldn't drink alcohol. I can't drink alcohol today. I know I will be able to drink alcohol. My biggest problem is I was always trying to drink alcohol. See, I was getting down the other day. I can't swim. Never did learn. That's funny around all this water, but where I live. And I never did. My brother wouldn't take me to the swimming hole, and I never did learn how to swim. It really ain't no problem. I go fishing. I get a life jacket. And I'm doing all right with that. See, but I don't go down and jump in the water every morning. If I went down and jumped in that ocean every morning, I'd be in a hell of a shape, you know. And I was always trying to do something when a man is an alcoholic, is trying, his mind is telling him to do something that he can't do, he's in a hell of a lot of trouble. And the truth is, he can't drink. And he never will be able to drink. And they showed me the first step. I love the first step because it says the truth will set you free. That's the first step is the truth of an alcoholic. And if you see the true nature of the problem, then you can be free from it. And the first step is the truth for an alcoholic. So number one, the second part of my illness is in the mind. And it's a real tricky thing. It's a strange mental quirk that we alcoholics develop. And just like sobriety, this part of alcoholism has to be learned, or you have to work at it. You just don't do it overnight. See, one time in my life, the doctor said I was restless and ill and discontent. And as a young person, I also had a very complex emotional life. Two areas that are vaguely understood from the great medical minds is our body chemistry and our emotional makeup, our mental makeup. We know very little about that area of human life. Now, we have all kinds of feelings, which are good. All of our feelings are standard equipment. You know, we have fear, which protects us. We couldn't live one day without fear. If somebody, you know, I was downtown yesterday in the traffic and looking at the people running across those streets and all that. Can you imagine what it would look like down there if we exhausted fear from everybody for 5 minutes? You couldn't cross the street without fear. Huh? Fear is a part of the human life. This is what makes you get the potholder when you pick up the pain. We use fear every day in our lives. Fear is a part of every human life. Sex, blindness, all these things, each of those, they may sound painful, like loneliness. Loneliness is probably the thing that brings us together in families and produces our society. All these emotions are great, but no human being is immune from having problems with emotions. All of us have problems with our feelings. I used to think that, you know, an alcoholic is not the only one to have problems with his feelings. All people have some degree of problems with their emotions. And we cause a lot of behavior problems. We see people in prison, and we see people with nervous breakdowns. We see people with all other different things. Some people just acted out, you know, in the behavior and the raise hell. And, you know, everybody has mental illnesses when we know what they are. Now, the alcoholic to be, somewhere along the line as a young person or in the growing up process, has some of these little problems. I know I was a very shy, inadequate person. I didn't feel good about me. I never did. I think this maybe, this is growing up. And that's what we're talking about. Becoming mature is when you develop adult reactions to life. I never did. And I always wanted to be a grown-up. I remember when I was a kid, I always couldn't wait till I grew up. Maybe that was my biggest problem. I was waiting, and I should have been working at it. and when I felt inadequate, and remember in high school, and they'd have little dances and things, and they would all be, I'm just kids, and I'd all be having fun, and I'd just feel funny. And one night I was standing around, I was about 18, 19 years old. I never had a drink before in my life. It doesn't happen to all everybody right like this. Some people, most people drink for a while before they learn this, but I was a smart alcoholic. I learned the first night. Didn't take me long to catch up. I took a few drinks, and for the first time in my life, I experienced a sense of ease and comfort came into my life. And I was able to do some things and say and act like I always wanted to. I often wonder what would have happened to my life had I not took those drinks. Had I not found that relief in my life. I might end up in a mental institution. I might end up in a prison. A lot of other things could have happened to me worse than alcoholism. But I remember that night, I said, boy, I don't have to feel that way no more. And I couldn't wait till the next time to do that. And I didn't learn it that night, but I kept on practicing that. Feel bad, take a drink. Feel bad, take a drink. Feel bad, take a drink. And I learned that thing. Feel bad, take a drink. Then I say, take a drink and feel bad. I know which comes first, the chicken or the egg. But this has to be learned. And we talked a little bit about it last night, and I can't go to the board and chug, but we'll talk about it. See, the alcoholic, when he first takes a drink, he goes way out. Right? And he develops. That few drinks make you feel real good. Then it's a losing game. Once you stretch that rubber band, you come back. You don't come back to where you left off. You come back just a little less. Then your drinking go up. You don't get to where you did before. You lose a little less. And so you're backing up. You're getting worse. You keep on trying to get there. And finally, you know, you take a few drinks to go out and have a good time. At the end of about 12 years, 10, 12 years, you're taking a drink just to get out of the bed, just to make the day. Okay, so the doctor says we build up, and this is over on this other side, on the mental side. We've got a little barometer there that kind of, we picture that. I love this because I think that a picture is a shortcut to teaching. And I think it's what the big book does. Our big book takes words and paints pictures for us. And what we got to do is see these pictures in the mind. And we build up on our early emotional scale. We take a few drinks. That one drink over there is our solution. And quite naturally, when we take that one drink, it depresses our emotions, and we feel better. It gives us, we always say we get high off alcohol. But you know, alcohol doesn't give us courage. We think it does, but it depresses fear. Right? When you're depressed spirit, it gives you a sense of having courage. So alcohol is a downer. And it comes back, oh, it depresses my emotions, and I feel better. Now, the doctor says the next time our emotions get bad, we build up to that point, we remember what we did the last time. We have a memory bank. When you got a problem, you get a solution, and the mind locks into that solution. It puts it in your computer. Now, the next time you have that problem, your mind refeeds you your old answer. It adds it together. And that's what we call addiction. It means plus. And the alcoholic begins to play that game in his mind. And this, he begins to create active alcoholism. Over on the left side, he builds up there, it triggers the idea to drink, the obsession. And we have said an obsession is an idea that overcomes all other ideas. You know, and we have to think about that. This is what an obsession is, an idea that overcomes all other ideas. See, my boss's idea was for me not to drink. My wife's idea was for me not to drink. And my idea was for me not to drink. But sometimes, you know, when I got restless and nervous and discontent, it would trigger the idea to drink. The idea to drink would overcome my wife's idea and my idea. And you know, we say we have a lot of things on our mind, which is not true. You can only have one thought on your mind at a time. They come through the tube one at a time, right? Can't but one come through at a time. Now you might switch back and forth and listen to me and listen to her and look over here at that sign real fast, but you can't do them two at a time. Now, obsession is the bully idea. It stands over at the tube and it says, I'm going down this time, and pushes out all other ideas. And you know, no action can be taken. All action is born in thought. Whether you get up out of that chair or whatever you do, you can't do it with the body unless the mind gives consent. So our problem, the main problem of the alcoholic is not drinking. The main problem of the alcoholic is the thought to drink. As long as we have this thought to drink, we're going to drink. But you know, this obsession, you know, I remember, you know, how it would be operating in my life. You know, I would get sick and get drunk and get maybe in the hospital or get in jail or something. And I'd be out for 2 or 3 weeks or 6 weeks. I said, boy, I'm going to quit that stuff. Boy, never no more. After what I've been through and I've seen a guy out there die, I know I will never take a drink. And I'd be walking along with that, and all at once the idea to drink, just out of clear blue sky. And I'd walk right in that liquor store. Was about to drink. When we talk about this obsession that makes us take the one drink, it's the mind. Now, as soon as we take the one drink within the system, it's no longer a mental problem. Because as soon as the alcohol hits the stomach and goes to the brain, it's a physical problem. The mind makes us take the first drink. Immediately, it switches on to the physical thing. The craving is triggered within the body, and we continue to drink because of the physical craving of alcohol. Now, once we come from that side, we come over here, it triggers the physical side, and the physical side makes us continue to drink, and we go through the well-known spree. We get sick, and down at the bottom, we repeat our national anthem, I will never do that again. I'm through with it. Then we slowly start another emotional buildup. What causes the alcoholic to build up and take a drink? Well, they say, well, he got lost his job, or his wife left him. That ain't what gets an alcoholic drunk. What gets an alcoholic drunk is getting up in the morning, shaving. Buying the shoes. Going in their bathroom with no toilet paper. Sit at the bus, same time. What gets the alcoholic is day-to-day living, which you can't escape from. It ain't his wife dying. He don't die but once. He gets drunk every day. It's day-to-day living. Things that we can't avoid that cause this buildup. They build up again, he reaches over. So he can't escape living. Now, he can stay asleep 24 hours. He could beat it. But if he wakes up, he's got it. So he reaches over there and takes that drink again. That drink sets off the body again. And this thing is like a tennis ball. And bat it over the net. The mind is making him take something into the system that he can't handle. Chemical deficiency gets worse with age, and because if you've got a chemical deficiency, the alcohol, and you're putting alcohol in there, the chemical deficiency is going to get worse. So the craving gets harder. And as the craving gets harder, the drinking gets harder. And as the drinking gets harder, you've got more emotional problems on that side to re-trigger it. So one side, they're tearing down each other. With progressive illness, and we say that we can sum this all up in what AA is talking about in the problem. AA, the first step is a problem statement. We admit we're powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. Now, if you have this physical illness, you can't drink alcohol safely. That's half your problem. If you've got this other side, this mental side, then you can't quit drinking alcohol. Now, if you can't drink alcohol and you can't quit drinking alcohol, then you're powerless over alcohol. I couldn't drink and I couldn't quit. And the first step of recovery is to see the name of the game you're in. Once you see the trick you're in, you can get out. Huh? There is always a way. There is not a problem on this world, earth, that there isn't an answer for. Now, if it wasn't an answer, it wouldn't be a problem. That's right. There's an answer to everything. I'll give somebody some numbers and tell them to create a problem. They can't create a problem. There ain't an answer for. Now, there's an answer. Dr. Sipler gave us this. And then there was another great psychiatrist. We're going to find out it wasn't about it. Dr. Silver didn't know the answer. All he'd done was this. On the other side of the world, there was a great psychiatrist, Dr. Carl Jung, who found the solution to this. Both of them medical people. And he told him, he said, I believe, now we look at this barometer over here, dude, I put all willpower in there and try to block out the obsessions. And that's what most alcoholics do. I stayed sober on willpower for 9 months. I was miserable, I was restless, and irritable, discontent, felt like hell, didn't take a drink, walk around mad. No, I felt like hell. And everybody come pat me on the back and said, boy, you sure are doing good. You quit drinking. Yeah. I had to act like I was doing good. And that morning came in my life. That day came, I never shall forget it. I had no defense against that first drink. I know today, and I was glad when I picked up the big book and come to AA and I found some other people that had this problem. Because I thought I was, you know, freak or unique or weak. And they told me, oh, that's okay, you're all right, you got an illness. They said, we had the same thing. And I took that drink that morning and I went again to the well-known spree. And I realized that willpower is only good in the mind. Willpower is good, when it's something you don't want to do. But when the mind gives you consent that it's all right, willpower is non-existent. And my mind would tell me it's all right to drink. And when a sick alcoholic who can't drink, and his mind tells him he can, that's insanity. And I didn't say I was crazy. I'm not getting into all that. The word insanity doesn't mean crazy. It just means less than whole. Sanitas means whole. Insanity means less than whole. Now, in all other areas, I was whole. I had a great mind. 99.9% of my mind was whole. But when it come to alcohol, I was strangely insane. Because my mind would give me consent to drink. Now, any alcoholic that's been in the hospital, been in the trouble that we're going through, and his mind says, that's insane. And I would build up and I would reach over and willpower would block it off and I would take this drink. So we know that the solution to alcoholism is in the mind, and this is so simple. It's so simple that I don't know why I didn't see this before. I don't know why I'd come to AA for a bunch of dumb drunks to tell me how to do it. Because I was smart, you know. But if you look up there, you know, if you can make some personality changes, if you can come from that second line, not even all the way down, if you can just come down one notch, you can live below that line. And if you could make some, get your act together, get your emotions together, and make a few sufficient to recover, if you just made a few changes, you would never get up to that point where you would trigger the obsession to drink. Therefore, you would never take the first drink. You will never set off the craving in the body. See, within my makeup today, I have a physical craving for alcohol. I haven't got any alcohol in my system this morning, but within my makeup, my physical makeup, that thing is there. Also, within my psychic makeup, within my mind, from deep where within my subconscious mind, I have an obsession to drink. I have both of them. They are not operable today, but they are there. If I let my emotions get out of whack and things go out of control, that obsession is going to come back. And I'm going to take a drink. And I hear people talking about, you know, what is this happening? Oh, I ain't going to blow my brains out. Now, that ain't my answer. Some of them other folks might. But I'll probably, when obsession returns, I'll drink. And it'll trigger that craving again. And I'll be in the same shape. So what this program is all about how to make some changes in your life. It didn't say you had to become religious or you got to be. Just make some gradual changes. Sufficient. You don't have to make, I really think personally, as I'm working with alcoholics, it doesn't take a whole lot of drastic changes not to drink. It says in a few months, we can make changes sufficient to recover from alcoholism. You don't have to be very well not to drink. We see that around AA. We see some sickies walking around here not drinking them. But it also means another thing. If you got to drink alcohol or take drugs to live, you are a sick cookie. You're sick. And I was that away. I was really sick. The first step explains to us the exact nature of our problem. Not almost, but exactly what my problem is. And that's what I want to know when I get ready to go. When I go to a doctor, I want him to know the exact nature of my problem. I kid about that all the time. If I go to a doctor and the doctor said, Joe said, we're going to operate on you Wednesday. That's the treatment plan. That's the 10 steps. You know what I mean? And I said, well, what's the problem, doc? You know, I want to know the first step. And he says, I don't know. I said, well, hell, we ain't going to have no operation. Until you know the exact nature of the problem. And I think that this is where we are here this morning. If you're an alcoholic, well, I hope that the something has been said here in this group to give you, forget about alcohol. It has nothing to do with being a bum or where you sleep or where you work. Now, those were two short questions. You know, there ain't no, you only need no 44 questions to find out you're an alcoholic. All you need two. When you drink alcohol, do you crave it? And when you don't drink it, do you have an obsession to drink it? If you are, you're probably alcoholic.